banking.samhsa.gov.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Takedown of an ISIS cell senior leader, but it wasn't the U.S. who killed the Kabul bombing mastermind. 13 U.S. service members and some 170 Afghans died in the 2021 airport attack. CBS's David Martin.
One of the dead was Marine Staff Sergeant Taylor Hoover. His father just got a call from the Marine Corps.
Explained to us that the leader of the ISIS cell that was responsible for the bombing was killed by the Taliban.
It happened earlier this month in fighting between the Taliban and ISIS. The U.S. found out through its own intelligence sources.
There's concern in California that historic rain and snowfall will now cause massive flooding. Governor Gavin Newsom surveyed ongoing flooding of the Tulare Basin in the southern San Joaquin Valley.
We're standing, likely will be underwater in a matter of weeks, if not months. And so that's very sobering in every way, shape, or form.
President Biden and his South Korean counterpart pay respects at the Korean War Memorial after first laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery. The stops came before formal White House meetings, part of President Yoon's six-day tour of the U.S. In New York City, a jury begins hearing a former advice columnist lawsuit against former President Trump of raping her in the 1990s. Trump, who was not in court today, says E. Jean Carroll fabricated the claim to sell a 2019 memoir. Former federal prosecutor Cheryl Bader.
Think about what the jurors are going to think. Right? Here they are, they're taking their time out to sit on this jury, and he doesn't even show up to court.
Singer Ed Sheeran appears in a New York courtroom accused of ripping off a Marvin Gaye soul classic. WCBS-TV's Dave Carlin.
The 32-year-old took the stand late Tuesday afternoon and testified he did not copy from Gaye's hit. He maintains it was art, not theft, and he did not violate copyright laws.
Harry Belafonte has died of congestive heart failure. He was 96. Fellow civil rights activists are remembering him as a legendary voice for social justice. CBS's Allison Keyes reports.
National Urban League president and CEO Mark Morial says Harry Belafonte was a legend for far more than his award-winning entertainment career.
He will be remembered for organizing other entertainers, other celebrities, other musicians, other actors.
Into the civil rights movement dating back to the 1960s. Morial agrees with civil rights leader Andrew Young that Belafonte became more radical with age.
He did not mince his words. He probably did get more strident, but it was heartfelt.
Allison Keyes, CBS News.
Stocks fall on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Let's be real. Mopping is a hassle. You have to fill the bucket, pushing a wet, heavy mop around, then cleaning the mop when you're done so it doesn't grow bacteria. A hassle on top of a hassle. Try Swiffer WetJet. With Swiffer WetJet, you start with a fresh pad and cleaning solution every time. And when you're done, you just toss the pad. Swiffer WetJet, the faster, easier, cleaner way to clean your floors.
This Entertainment Insider is sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
Even after his Parkinson's diagnosis, legendary musician Neil Diamond says he still loves to sing.
I feel good. It's like all the systems of my mind and my body are working as one when I'm singing, and it's a great feeling.
Progressive can protect your home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, RV, and more. In short, a lot of things. Bundle today at progressive.com.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
I'm Naheem Hines.
professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows around 29. Tonight, under partly cloudy skies, northeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Highs around 54. Tomorrow, partly cloudy. 38 tomorrow night, slight chance for scattered showers. Chance for scattered showers Thursday, with a chance for scattered storms Friday. Highs in the mid-60s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 44.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
On Wednesday, there's a child labor briefing, and I can't believe it. You've heard me say this before. I cannot believe that we're in this moment talking about kids going back to work. It just blows my mind. But there is a member-level child labor briefing by the Department of Labor's principal deputy administrator to that committee. And you go, how is it that this has even gone this far? The fact that states across this country are well organized in pushing a repeal of a lot of the labor laws that we put in place to protect children, to ensure that they go to school, that they get an education, that they have an opportunity to be kids. I mean, it's nuts to me. But this is where we are. And Iowa has been out in front leading the horrible charge. And that's why I've asked Iowa State Senator and Democratic leader Zach Walls to come talk with us. I saw Zach give a speech on one of the social media platforms, and I said, I got to get this guy to come share some thoughts. Zach, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, really happy to be here.
So let's start with right from the beginning. I mean, I cannot believe that we're in this moment. I can't wrap my head around the idea that people sitting in the same chamber that you're in are okay with 14-year-olds going into meatpacking plants, doing dangers. I'm struggling with that. Help me if you can.
Well, you and me both, Rick. You know, that was one of, I would say, the most heartless debates that I've ever been a part of in the Iowa Senate, and we've had some really bad ones. And, you know, the reality, of course, is that Iowa is facing a workers' crisis. But rather than raising wages, rather than trying to make our state more attractive to new workers, what Senate Republicans and Governor Kim Reynolds are doing is trying to allow Iowa kids, you know, young teenagers, to work more dangerous jobs. I would say that they have this attempt to roll back protections that have been in place for decades. And frankly, it's a pretty radical redefinition of what it means to be a young person. You know, Rick, if you're anything like me, I worked jobs when I was a teenager. Sure. They were incredibly rewarding and enriching experiences. We don't have a problem with teenagers working in age-appropriate, safe conditions. What we have a problem with is this idea that you're going to allow 16 or 17-year-olds to serve alcohol, that you're going to allow them to work in hazardous or dangerous occupations like roofing or excavation or demolition. And you're not just endangering the kids themselves, but the adults working around them. There's a reason why we have these fair labor and child labor laws to protect against that kind of exploitation, and Republicans are trying to roll that back. It's shocking.
No, and you used the word that I was going to use. I mean, I'm not against kids learning good work ethic. I want my kids to have good work ethic. They've always had jobs that they've done, but they've not been the exploitative kind of jobs. They've not been the dangerous jobs. They're not the ones that are competing with their parents to put food on the table. These are learning jobs, not career jobs. And that to me is a struggle. Because, you know, I want kids to have good work ethic. I had a paper route at 8 years old, taught me enormous lessons. This isn't what we're talking about.
Right. No, that's exactly right. I mean, the proposal that Republicans have put forward, I mean, fundamentally, it takes Iowa in the wrong direction. Just like you said, you know, we want Iowa kids to have enriching work experiences that prepare them for lifelong careers, right? But the changes that Senate Republicans made in their legislation, it just opens the door for exploitation and for dangerous work that could get Iowa kids injured or even killed. You know, there was and we were talking about this during the break, there was this investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor recently. They wound up making a seven-figure penalty to a food sanitation company that was hiring, you know, over 100 children in states across the Midwest, kids as young as 13 years old doing sanitation work in meatpacking plants. I mean, this is really radical, radical stuff that Republicans are putting forward. And the thing that I'll say, you know, this bill doesn't say that what happened in that situation is okay, but it's all about the kind of culture that you're creating, right? Republicans want a culture where those kinds of things are going to be more common and not less. I think that any reasonable, any common sense person would look at an investigation like what the U.S. Department of Labor did and said, what we should be doing is strengthening protections against child labor. In Iowa, Republicans did exactly the opposite.
Now, what was interesting to me, and you, obviously you know the law much better than I do, that went through. One of the things that caught my attention was the immunity shield that Republicans seem to love for corporations. Can you explain a little bit better than I can this idea that if I'm getting this right, if there's a program between a school and an employer, and the kid gets hurt, the employer is not responsible. They're immune. Is the school responsible? Are the parents responsible? Is the kid just out of luck? How do they justify that? How do they justify that?
Well, I mean, frankly, there is no justification. I mean, they for many years, Iowa was a state that prided itself on having a moderate government, either center left or center right. Instead, what we've seen in the last several years since Republicans took the trifecta is this increasingly radical march towards kind of the ultra right wing. And it's really hard to watch, obviously, because Iowa for decades was, like I said, a very moderate state. We voted for some Republicans, we voted for some Democrats, but we were pretty close to the middle. And what's happened, I mean, this has mostly really happened since Donald Trump's rise in 2016, is you've seen this march further and further and further to the right. And so, you know, this child labor bill, I mean, again, they're justifying the whole thing is trying to say that they're going to solve this worker shortage that we have here. But we know that policing children in unsafe working conditions, that's not a solution.
Yeah, I mean, just the premise from the start, we're going to solve our worker shortage by exploiting children. That's a sentence that should not be spoken.
100% on the literal backs of children. I mean, think about how twisted that is. And again, this isn't about, from my perspective, this isn't about saying teenagers are already able under current Iowa law to work in safe, appropriate professions. And by the way, we're not just talking about, you know, working at a grocery store. I mean, you know, you can give teenagers really serious responsibility. I was a lifeguard when I was a teenager. I mean, you're talking about situations where if something goes wrong, you're literally expected to go pull somebody who's drowning out of water, right? We're not saying that kids can't or teenagers can't be trusted with responsibility. What we're saying is that the law should protect them against being exploited in unsafe work environments that jeopardize their health or their development and their ability to earn an income. Right. So we introduced amendments that would have said basically because think about it, right? If you're a teenager and you get hurt on the job and your workers' compensation is tied to your earnings and you're a teenager, I mean, you're in big trouble, right? And so we said, look, there are other professions where we have decided if you're a volunteer firefighter, right, you're not getting paid anything, but it's a dangerous profession. If you get hurt as a volunteer firefighter, you should be able to get fair compensation, workers' compensation, even though you don't have adequate earnings. And Republicans said no.
Wow.
Right. And Rick, I don't know if this even got on your radar, but during this debate, Senate Republicans actually decided to stop answering questions at all on the floor. You know, historically, the back and forth of debate, asking Republican senators questions about what's in the bill, trying to establish legislative intent, I mean, that has been historically, I mean, any deliberative body. That's
how it's supposed to work. Yeah, it's
exactly.
So, the question that I have out of this then, because I wanted to get to this, is this emanating from legislators in Iowa, or is this part of a much bigger scheme? Because we're seeing these bills popping up in other states. I mean, I look at the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, who has all this model legislation. Is there a body out there saying child labor is our thing and we're moving this across in states across the country? Are you seeing that? Because, look, if you can't answer a question about your bill, it tells me you didn't write it.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. And we have seen a Florida-based operation. It's called the Opportunity Solutions Project. They've been working in Iowa for several years now. Before this year, most of their work had been targeting our social safety net, going after things like food stamps, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and other forms of public assistance that so many Iowa families depend on because corporations are paying such low wages and so many families are still struggling to get by. And that was, you know, that was true, you know, before this year. And now this new outfit, this Opportunity Solutions Project, which, I mean, it sounds like something that like an artificial intelligence chatbot came up with. It's just gobbledygook. It doesn't mean anything. You know, they basically are now pushing this bill forward on the child labor piece. My understanding is not just in Iowa, but across the country. And so I don't know if this is associated with Ron DeSantis somehow, Florida or whatever. But there's certainly, I think, you're seeing this very hands-on approach, part of the systematic rollback happening at the state level. You know, and my guess, Rick, is that you're going to start to see this new Supreme Court with stacked with these, you know, Republican justices. Essentially, is they can, just like they did, you know, on the abortion issue, push that power from the federal level back down to the state level. What might be happening here is that this Opportunity Solutions Project is kind of getting out in front of that. You know, maybe there's a challenge coming into the federal level to some of the fair labor or child labor protections that are out there. And so they're trying to kind of preempt it almost at the state level.
No, all these groups with these euphemistic names, like, you know, the Institute for the Love of Puppies, you know, they have nothing but nefarious means at the end of it. And this is one of those. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Iowa State Senator Zach Weil. Walls, he is also the Democratic leader there. Let me ask you this, because, you know, you brought up food stamps a moment ago. It seems like all of this stuff is, you know, attacking working people, and there seems to be that playbook. Is it all this Opportunity Solution people, or are there other actors involved in this? Because it looks to me, and again, as you said a moment ago, Iowa had always been a fairly moderate state, fairly middle of the road. I mean, one of my favorite people, Tom Arkins, I was a senator there for years. It seems like there's a radical agenda. Food stamps, you know, the bill that you guys had was insane. Now there's this legislation going through to strip the Auditor General of its powers. There's a lot going on here to not just tear apart our social safety net, but also tear apart the very checks and balances, the very democratic processes that we've come to expect out of our country.
Yeah, Rick, that's absolutely right. So, I mean, tomorrow we actually just got the debate calendar. Senate Republicans will be debating and almost certainly passing a bill that will strip our auditor of state, who not coincidentally is the only statewide elected Democrat left in Iowa. Auditor Rob Sand will essentially strip him of his ability to actually conduct investigations and actually audit and be an effective watchdog for taxpayers. What Republicans are doing is taking our watchdog, putting them in the kennel, and throwing away the key, right? You can't be an effective watchdog if you don't have the ability to subpoena people and investigate people and get answers to tough questions. That's the whole point. And again, that goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago with Republicans refusing to answer questions on the Senate floor, refusing to give the public the answers that they deserve about the legislation that the highest deliberative body, the Iowa Senate, is considering. It also goes to something that is, I mean, so hard to talk about. You almost can't believe that it's true. But this year, for the first time that anyone here can remember, when Senate Republicans introduced their state budgets, right? We all know what a budget is. It's the numbers that you use to plan how you're going to spend your money. Republicans introduced budgets that didn't have numbers. We called these blank check budgets. You know, it's funny to me because Republicans will say, oh, Democrats don't know what a woman is because they support rights for transgender people. Apparently, Iowa Republicans don't know what a budget is because they said that these were budgets and they didn't even have numbers in them. I mean, give me a break. And so now we're debating these budgets, and the actual numbers are getting filled in at the 11th hour. Public had no opportunity to weigh in. It's just these step after step after step towards one-party rule and no consideration of a lowercase d democratic process at all.
No, look, it's not just Iowa. I look at what Ron DeSantis did in Florida, you know, throwing that prosecutor off. I look at a lot of the talk of legislation in places like Georgia to go after prosecutors. I mean, there's a lot of this kind of fascistic, you know, behavior going on. And it's one of those things where, you know, the Maya Angelou quote, when someone tells you who they are, believe them. Yeah. I'm looking at the Republican Party right now, and this is an anti-democratic party who hates working people. I say it all the time. Republicans hate working people. Look at what they're doing, and look what they did to your state. I mean, the food stamp thing, the child labor thing, the education bill that we didn't even talk about. There is so much bad going on. So my last question for you is this resonating with anyone? I mean, are your constituents seeing this? Are people getting it, or are they on the outrage side?
No. So Rick, I've been a state senator since 2018, and I've been the Senate minority leader since 2020. So we're just finishing my third session now as leader. And one of the things that we've really launched this year is a renewed effort to do two particular things. One, engaging our labor partners, making sure that we're talking to our leadership, trying to get in front of their membership to hear their questions, listen to them, dialogue with them. We've had these meetings across the state, over in Council Bluffs in Western Iowa, and just this past Saturday in Burlington, which is in southeast Iowa, historic manufacturing community right along the Mississippi River. And questions about public education were on everybody's mind. Your listeners have probably seen some of these bills introduced across the country, things attacking our public education system, taking $1 billion out of our public education system over the next 4 years, handing those over to private school that are this voucher program. And we're already seeing, by the way, the ink on that law is just drying, and private schools in Iowa are already saying, well, yeah, don't worry, we're going to raise tuition. So it's this huge scam. It's going to hurt working people. It's going to hurt public education and all the families who depend on it. And I do think that you're seeing in that Burlington town hall, people wanted to talk about public education more than any other topic. Not only the private school voucher program, but attempts to ban books, to go after teachers, to put them in jail. I mean, things that sound, you know, just dystopian, like they're out of 1984 or Animal Farm, but instead that's what's happening. And I think the thing that's so important, we can't let Republicans divide us. That's what they're trying to do with all of this stuff. They're trying to pit us against each other to say, oh, this is about attacking transgender kids, or oh, this is about attacking, you know, people of color, whatever the case may be. And we have to say no. We know that there's power in solidarity. We know that when people come together, we can fight for a common good that we share. We can't let the fear and the hatred divide us. We have to come together. That's what this is all about.
There you go. Zach, I appreciate you taking some time. As this stuff continues, I'd love to have you come back and share some more with us. Because, look, I think Iowa is like ground zero and horrible. So anything we can do to help, let me know. I appreciate your time.
I look forward to being back again.
Thanks so much, Senator Zach Walls. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work
for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
It's really amazing what has happened to Iowa. And like I said, you know, we went through there in October, and everyone we talked to, you know, was saying, look, the state's getting more radical. It's the media culture that has just gripped the right-wing talk radio, the F channel, all of this that has pushed them in this direction of fear. Because look, people are struggling. People are struggling to make ends meet. And, you know, you see all of this money going in there, pushing in a direction to undo public education, to undo restrictions for child labor, to, you know, to tatter the social safety net even more. And that, interestingly enough, you know, in talking with the people while we were there, that was part of who they were, the pride of community. And they're really tearing it apart. So for me, the question becomes, do people wake up and see what's happening around them? Or, you know, is it that, you know, you're in the boiling water? I don't know. Interesting story that was somebody sent me. I don't talk an awful lot about COVID because the whole COVID thing is, you know, probably the worst case of Monday morning quarterbacking ever. I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem of what we did to keep people safe. I think we probably went maybe a little too conservative. But the reality is grandma didn't die. And what I find interesting is the people who say, oh, it was all a hoax, there's no big deal because we're still alive. That kind of makes me laugh because we did all of these things to keep people safe. Now, did we do some things wrong? Yeah, always. You're always going to do some things wrong. There's always going to be someone to Monday morning quarterback. Now, there were some things that were plain crazy. And one of them came from my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, where there was a doctor, and you may remember her. She was the one who went in front of the Ohio Senate and said that, actually it was the House. It wasn't the Senate. I want to be completely accurate. It was the House. She testified that, how did it go? That people are being magnetized by the vaccine. That if you took the, you know, the dreaded shot, that you now had keys sticking to your forehead. And that there was an interface between the vaccine and the 5G towers. I'm not sure what that interface was, but I gotta assume it was, you know, something to make you crazy, or I don't even know. But you remember she was mocked pretty badly about it. Evidently, and this is the story that the headline was, is, you know, Ohio doctor says coronavirus vaccines make you magnetic. The state wants to pull her license. So the right has been losing their mind, going, we're going to defend her. And I'm going, how can you possibly defend her? It's not even about the stupid stuff she said when you bother to read the article. And this is why it's so important to have all of the facts and not just a headline that someone wrote after the fact. The reality is evidently after she testified, the state board went, the state medical board of Ohio, went to investigate her. They regulate physicians. Now, whatever that reason was, she decided to ignore the subpoena. She decided to ignore everything and just not participate, refused to cooperate. So they're saying, well, you know, if you're not going to cooperate, we're going to have to pull your license until you do. Now, this is one of those funny moments where you go, so she doesn't recognize the body that oversees her profession that she has a license to, but she's fighting to hold on to the license from a body that she doesn't recognize, who she believes is unconstitutional, which is crazy. It's a lot of crazy talk.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out.
but put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Having low income can mean making tough choices. Choosing between paying for food or medication or a place to live is a reality for many people. Do you know someone who could use some extra help? Find out about the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, administered by Social Security. You could receive monthly SSI payments if your income and financial resources are low and you are 65 or older, or an adult or child with a disability or who is blind. SSI is money you can use to help pay for basic needs, like putting food on the table, keeping the lights on, paying the rent. It can mean new shoes for growing feet or help with medical needs. Call 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSI to schedule an appointment or start to apply today. That's ssa.gov/SSI. This message produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, "Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out."
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really?
Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Tired of low or no connectivity? Do you live in BTN, Bug Tussle Nowhere? We want to talk to you. Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet to the places others don't. No contracts, no data caps, truly unlimited internet. Call 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows around 29. Tonight, under partly cloudy skies, northeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Highs around 54. Tomorrow, partly cloudy. 38 tomorrow night, slight chance for scattered showers. Chance for scattered showers Thursday, with a chance for scattered storms Friday. Highs in the mid-60s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 44.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Are saying, as one 10-year-old student in Llano succinctly testified, it's not the county's job to burn the library down. The high tower.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of fun and entertainment on the Twitters today. The Blue Check Mafia out in full force defending their boy, Schmucker Carlson. A couple of my favorites, you know, Marjorie Trainwreck Greene. Cable news is about to be taught a powerful lesson after Fox News caved to the woke mob and fired Tucker Carlson. Americans no longer blindly watch the news like they did decades ago. They only watch the ones who have the courage to tell the truth. Americans are about to quit watching. And my thought is the truth. Which truth are we talking about? Are we talking about the truth that he came on air and said, this is the truth? Or the truth that he was emailing about how the people watching this are all dupes and how he believed none of it? I'm just curious. Which alternative truth do we believe? And here to share some thoughts on the whole shenanigans. I've asked Madeline Peltz to come talk with us. She's the Media Matters Deputy Director of Rapid Response. Madeline, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So this is where my mind's at. Which truth are we talking about?
I think that we will see the various truths unfold over the next few days. Obviously, the news of Tucker Carlson's ouster has been shrouded in mystery, a lot of speculation about how exactly we ended up here. And certainly it was a sudden outcome. I don't think anyone saw it coming. It's difficult to overstate exactly how much of an impact this will have on not only cable news, but cable in general. And it remains to be seen exactly what led to this outcome. But I think that there's a lot of people who want to clear up their role in this. And certainly I think there will be a lot of chatter among the mainstream press in the coming days.
There's part of me that goes, you know, it happened so quickly. And I got to think this has got to be one of those elevator things. Because if Fox News was really going to get rid of him, they would have transitioned. They would have done, you know, some triangulations, whatever. This seems to me like this was a personal thing. Somebody said something on the elevator. He was called into a meeting. Rupert didn't like it. And it was that kind of knee jerk. That's where my mind thought is. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that I didn't see it ending like this. I think the fact that they were running a promo for his show later that night, about 10 minutes before the news broke that he had been terminated, is somewhat of a smoking gun, that this was extremely sudden. If it's not a smoking gun, then it is truly a comedy of errors. But I think based on what I've been reading, there has been a lot of surprise within the building at Fox News about this outcome. There was a report today that Tucker Carlson found out 10 minutes before he was terminated that there was a press release going out. I don't know whether or not that's going to hold up to be the case, but it's pretty extraordinary. I think that it likely has something to do with the lawsuit he's facing in New York of creating a hostile work environment brought by a former producer. And that stems from Fox's her testimony in the Dominion case. And so all of these things are deeply intertwined with each other. And I think it is it's certainly a big media drama and the talk of the town today.
Yeah, look, I'm happy to see, you know, some sanity going on over there, but because it seems to me that the check went out and they go $787 million. That's a lot of money. And oh, by the way, as you pointed out, he's got a suit, they've got a suit, there's another suit. It seems like the pockets may be only so deep. So Maybe that was part of the purge. Anybody else on the chopping block? I know there was talk of Maria Bartiromo and the judge Janine. Are they next? Are they on the chopping block?
I haven't heard. I'm not. I will be the first to tell you, but I don't know. I think it's really stunning that Maria Bartiromo is still at the network. I'm not exactly sure what she brings besides being a completely unhinged liability. And it's really her. I mean, the trajectory of her career is so unusual. She started as a trailblazer for women in financial television and is now widely regarded as a crackpot. And I don't know exactly what audience she's bringing to Fox or why they're protecting her, but she's still there. Not only is Judge Janine still there, but there has been reporting in the industry press that she is featured prominently in their pitch to advertisers as they approach the major ad buying season in their in the way that the ads are bought and sold cyclically on cable news. And she is a big part of the pitch that they're putting forward. And that, again, it shows that Fox has not learned its lesson and has no intention to moderate.
Yeah, because I'm waiting to see who's next. Because, someone asked me, you think they're going to try and come back to the center? I go, no. They're going further than Tucker. Tucker will be moderate. We will look back. We will pine for the days of the moderate Tucker Carlson by the time Fox is done with this. Because they understand what sells. And the line that I keep coming back to, Uncle Rupert gave it to us. It's not red or blue. It's green. And they understand what brings in the green. And crazy brings in the green.
Yeah, Tucker's not, he was the biggest voice in cable news. He had the biggest ratings or among the biggest ratings on the best rated network. But with that being said, in the absence of Trump, his influence was not what it was in 2018, 19, 2020, that it is in 2023. And at a certain point, all of these things that have piled up in the last few months and weeks, the Kevin McCarthy giving him the January 6 tapes, the Ray Epps thing that was on 60 Minutes, that all of the revelations from the Dominion suit, at a certain point, it's just not worth the headache.
Yeah. Any chance it was the Epps thing? I mean, there were a lot of people saying, well, they brought this up, this could be more. Any chance that was it? It seems mild to me, given the stuff that they've done over the years, but any chance that that has a part of it?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that that could really be the main reason. But with that being said, it's not hard for me to imagine Rupert Murdoch watching 60 Minutes and being totally over it, essentially saying, I'm not going through this again, should another defamation suit come down. And the Ray Epps coverage was terrible, just like the Seth Rich coverage was terrible. It's just going into this critical ad buying season, as well as high profile contract renegotiations with cable carriers. Fox is circling the wagons, and it seems like Tucker Carlson may not have been willing to play ball behind the scenes.
Yeah, as were Hannity. I think Hannity perfectly will do whatever you want. Hannity's your boy. He will follow. He will follow the commands, which is why I think he's perfectly safe.
Yeah, I think that he has learned some of the lessons that came with the outrage cycles from his show during the Trump administration, and he is simply not as influential among the Republican Party as Tucker Carlson has come to be in recent years. Sean Hannity knows what the line is, and Tucker Carlson knows what the line is too. He just doesn't care.
Yeah. Well, again, it comes back to that, like Rupert said, it's not about red or blue, it's about green, and they get that. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Madeline Peltz. She's the Deputy Director of Rapid Response at Media Matters, mediamatters.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do there and follow along. So what is this going to mean for Fox? What does this mean for the cable news world? I mean, you saw Don Lemon fired, now you got Tucker fired. And it seems like the cycle's moving crazier to the extreme. Do you see Tucker landing at OAN or one of the other more radical right-wing outlets? Or does he start his own little shindig?
I don't see him landing at another cable network like OAN or Newsmax. First of all, I don't think that they can afford them. One American News simply doesn't have the distribution for Tucker to be interested. And so I don't see him landing at another cable network. It's also very possible that he's under a non-compete that could last for years before he's able to transition into the next phase of his career. And in terms of digital right-wing media, the space is very overcrowded. You've got Steven Crowder, you've got The Daily Wire, you've got The Blaze, you've got The Daily Caller. These are all outlets that are not only competing with each other, but cannibalizing each other's audiences. And it's really not fruitful ground for a personality like Tucker Carlson. He will end up somewhere. It's very possible that this right-wing video hosting rival to YouTube, it's called Rumble, and is backed by Peter Thiel, that they are scaling up a robust exclusive creators program. It's possible he could end up there, depending on what the non-compete says, but he will never be the same Tucker Carlson that he was on Friday ever again. It is impossible for him to garner the same audience that Fox News has. The 8 p.m. hour of Fox News is a legacy hour. Tucker Carlson got lucky. He inherited Bill O'Reilly's audience, and it was a built-in floor of ratings that he took O'Reilly's model and simply supercharged it. And now, none of that would have been possible without Fox as an institution. And so it'll never, ever be the same for him again.
No, it's going to be interesting to see where he lands and how this goes. But if you listen to the Musk marks on Twitter, the folks with the blue check mafia who are just all in. In fact, the reason that Tucker was fired was simply because he had the audacity to tell the truth and refused to let Fox News control him. Which you go, I think we're touching in that alternative reality a little too much, and what it is we're drinking or smoking is not helping.
Well, that exact crowd of right-wing influencers on Twitter, they are big losers in this too, because no one was giving a platform as big of a platform to the likes of Libs of TikTok or Glenn Greenwald as Tucker Carlson tonight was. And there will be no platform that will come in and sweep up that same cast of characters and provide them with a microphone like Tucker. And so they are mad, and because they've suffered a loss in this as well.
Yeah, I feel their pain. Let's go with that. I'm feeling their pain. So where do we see this going? Again, I mean, you're the one, you follow this stuff. I've never, just between you and me, I've never actually watched Tucker's show. I've seen clips, but I've never actually watched it on TV. In fact, I want nothing to do with Fox News. What fills that gap? I mean, are we seeing someone coming up? I mean, Jesse Waters, took over for O'Reilly and kind of filled that space. Is there an up-and-coming person that we were seeing maybe fill in this spot? What are you thinking?
It's hard to say. Fox, frankly, has a shallow bench. A lot of people are floating Jesse Waters. I think Jesse Waters would not be as successful in the 8 p.m. hour, either as Tucker Carlson or as he is now in the 7 p.m. hour. And so that wouldn't be my first choice if I was leading Fox News. There's a number of other peripheral figures at the network, like Pete Hegseth, Judge Jeanine, as you mentioned, and others who potentially could take over the 8 p.m. hour. But again, impossible to fill the shoes of Tucker Carlson in terms of his influence in the Republican Party and internally at Fox News. And I think that my personal opinion, and not everyone agrees with me, but I think that it's possible that there is from this digital right-wing media ecosystem, a figure like a Candace Owens who could come in and take over and leverage their viral social media audience to create some new energy at the 8 p.m. hour for Fox News. But that is a really high bar to clear for someone who doesn't come from a TV background, and they are in really a difficult place where their 8 p.m. hour is vacant ahead of the ad buying season and these cable contract negotiations.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because, you know, look, Fox has been the center of that right-wing echo chamber for so long. And, you know, I know a lot of my left friends are like, oh, my God, this is the end of them. Another lawsuit. All this could be the end. I'm going, no, they'll be fine. They're going to find their way. And I think they're going to be crazier on the other side. But it is entertaining to watch this this moment. Do you see anything? Last question I've got for you. Do you see anything positive coming out of this? I know I've had a bunch of people say, well, this is good for democracy. Media is going to, you know, moderate because of these lawsuits. Do you see anything good out of this?
Well, I don't think that lawsuits are the way to resolve a problem like Fox News. I think that the case with Dominion was just an extraordinary body of evidence that that was able to take a defamation case farther than anyone anticipated, just based on the sheer volume of evidence. So I don't hope that we are litigating the press in the courts. With that being said, Tucker Carlson losing his slot is an enormously important achievement for protecting democracy. I think about what is going on in Missouri right now with transgender people losing access to gender affirming care and the panic that is spreading throughout that community in that state. And it's people like Tucker Carlson who have been driving that hate campaign and fear campaign. And without that microphone in his hand in the same way, it will alleviate some pressure on anti-trans hysteria that has taken hold in the Republican Party. That said, it's not going away. It's still a big fight that we need to fight for, but there is no one who has participated in this hate campaign with as big of a microphone as Tucker Carlson. And so I am hopeful that this will slow down the momentum of legislation in the states that is attacking LGBTQ folks and communities.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see where this plays out. But Madeline, I appreciate you sharing a little time with us. Thanks for your insight. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks so much.
Good stuff, Madeline Peltz. Make sure you check out the work she does over at Media Matters, where she is the Deputy Director of Rapid Response, MediaMatters.org, the website, if you want to take a look at that. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Love the talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. The governor of South Carolina sent 1,000 state troopers and National Guardsmen to Charleston, South Carolina. They were sent there to deal with the striking hospital workers who wanted union recognition. The strike had started on March 19th at the Medical College Hospital. A little over a week later, more than 60 black workers from the Charleston County Hospital joined the strike in solidarity. The governor was determined to use every tactic at his disposal to break the strike. He worried that if the strikers were successful, unionization efforts would spread throughout the other sectors of state employees. During the strike, a hotel room of one of the union organizers was bombed by an unknown assailant. Soldiers with bayonets marched through the streets of Charleston. Hundreds of picketers were arrested, including teenagers who had joined the protest. The governor had gone as far as imposing a 9 p.m. curfew on people to keep them off the street. lawsuits. But the workers were determined to win their rights. The United Auto Workers sent $10,000 to support the striking workers. Civil rights leaders from across the nation came to South Carolina to support the workers. Andrew Young and Ralph Abernathy of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference were among those who were arrested. Coretta Scott King, the widow of Dr. King, gave a speech saying, "Hospital workers have been working full-time jobs at part-time pay. After all, $1.30 an hour is not a wage. It is an insult. I also have another interest in being here," she said, "and that is many of the hospital workers throughout our nation are women, black women. Many of them are the main supporters of their families." The hospital workers were able to win a grievance process and modest pay increase. Although they did not win union recognition, they inspired hospital workers across the country. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. So our quote of the day comes from the Donald over on the Truth Socials. I still can't get that Truth Social thing out of my head. But Trump socialed out. The fact that Tucker Carlson will no longer be on Fox News is a big blow to cable news and to America. Tucker was insightful, interesting, and ratings gold. And, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, you suck up much? Because the only person who could really, I think, tear Trump apart would be Tucker. I mean, and my mind goes back to that Monday interview that he did where, you know, Tucker Carlson, after we know all the things that he said about Trump in emails and all of the things that he believed about the election nonsense that was being thrown out, that he sat there fairly neutered and didn't press Trump at all and, you know, bobbed his head like he was supposed to, let Donald finish, you know, that kind of stuff. There used to be an old profession that used to do that too, but now that Tucker's gone, Trump's got to kind of, I think, worry a little bit, because if Tucker comes out and goes, "I'm going to go after him," could be interesting. I do find it funny that, you know, Trump wants to get the old gang back together. Evidently, there has been some rumblings about bringing Kellyanne Conway back. That ought to be fun. I'm not sure if she's going to come back, but it'll be interesting. Now on the Tucker thing, I got a couple of emails from folks saying no, that I was probably right in that it was a personal thing between Tucker and Rupert Murdoch. I think this is one of those things that were just a bridge too far. And one of the theories now being floated, one of the theories is, and I didn't know this until I just got the email, is that I guess last Friday Tucker had given a speech to the Heritage Foundation because, hey, you know, they keep spreading the money around. It was their 50th anniversary gala. And in that 50th anniversary, think about the damage the Heritage Foundation has done in 50 years. I mean, because understand, the Heritage Foundation came out of that whole Powell memo from 1971. So just 2 years later, they built this and fund the Heritage Foundation. And look, out of that sprung all of these think tanks, all of the state policy network, all of these euphemistically named groups like, you know, for the love of apple pie and mom or, you know, whatever, who are doing just the worst things to our country. But with such happy sounding names. But evidently, Tucker gave a speech where I guess the religion thing supposedly went a little too far for Rupert Murdoch. You know, in framing it in those religious terms, if it was just a battle between good and evil, and, you know, if you know, we let that DEI and those trans people exist, they're going to destroy the country, so we need to pray. And what it's being reported is that's it's a bit too far. And I guess he did it again, and the next day, which, you know, caught Rupert's attention, and I guess from what the source is now saying, that kind of stuff freaks Rupert out. He doesn't like all the spiritual talk. And for me, that makes perfect sense. You just go, you know, I had enough. Enough. Yeah, it's interesting. And maybe not surprising. You know, there's, you know, I've said before, you know, part of what freaks me out is you get these people who talk about freedom, but don't understand what it means, and then use it in the context of religion. And only, of course, only their religion, not yours or anyone else's or freedom from. It's just theirs, their narrow-minded belief. And this is not what I...
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, "I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action." Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full-time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248.